I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Well, from sea to shining sea, this is the Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors with Dan Bush and myself, Tom Neubauer. Sam Schmitz is on the board. We welcome you to another Saturday morning where we come to you every Saturday from 6 to 8 a.m., and we are live, so if you call the show, watch your words here, folks. Anyway, it's kind of a dreary morning. It's still dark out. My goodness, I got to wake up this morning. But anyway, if you want to get in touch with us on the show, all you got to do is call us at 799-1250. That's 414-799-1250. Or you can always email us live at ceoguys@yahoo.com. Good morning, Danny.
Morning, Tom. Great job of bringing us back there. You know, I can't believe we're sending private citizens into space. We're talking about sending people to live on Mars, and we still have technical difficulties in this world.
We can't get people to live here in peace on this planet. What are they going to do to go to another planet?
Just think, if you got a technical difficulty, like at a radio station where, you know, problem with the can't play our opening or whatever, that's one thing. But if you have a technical difficulty on the way to Mars, you're probably dead. So, you know, all this technology that we rely on so much, I don't know.
I'll tell you, if Jeff Bezos calls me up one day and says, hey, do you want to fly up in the outer space for 10 minutes? I'd say, no, thank you, Jeff. I don't want to throw up all over your spacecraft.
I'm glad you brought old Jeff up. Now, he's the guy who started Amazon, right?
Yeah, and a few other things, yeah.
Okay, so I got a few gripes I'd like to get off my chest to old Jeffer there. I ordered, as I mentioned, I'm going to go see I'm flying to Destin, Florida to see my old buddy Tim Coleman. I went to college with him. We got in trouble a lot together, fortunately. Only one of us went to jail once, I think. But, he's old buddy, and he's married, settled down, got a great family. And going to go down there. He's got a condo on the beach for me, and Troy Woody Woodrow is going to join me. And we've got Captain, I think his name's Scott Whitehurst, is a captain down there, and we're going to go out fishing. Troy got him chartered for a couple of days. But I thought, you know, in the meantime, we're going to be right by the Navarre fishing pier in a condo right there. We can walk out on the pier and fish. So I ordered two rods and reels. And being as that I'm a big fan of Pure Fishing products, I'm on their Captain Guide service. I, of course, looked and saw, you know, what kind of products. And I found a Abu Garcia Cardinal Bruiser Combo, which is basically a big spinning rod and reel pre-spooled with 20-pound line. And it's, they say, saltwater reel. Looks like something you might, you know, throw spoons off a Lake Michigan pier to try and catch salmon. Mm-hmm. So I ordered two of those, and they were supposed to be delivered by Amazon. I went to Amazon, you know, and so Amazon, I hate to say, you know, when all the major sporting goods stores, nobody had this combo. Couldn't find it anywhere. Amazon had it. But it was supposed to be shipped to my buddy's place down in Florida. Then I get an email confirmation saying it was delivered on Tuesday, right? 9:52, left at the front door. Well, he calls me, says there's nothing at the front door. He's checking security cameras. He's talking to his neighbor's security talking about, did you see any trucks pull up? So I sent them an email yesterday, and now I get this back from Amazon. Now, this is after I got confirmation of the time and place it was delivered, and it says, dear customer, we have contacted the shipping carrier, and unfortunately, they have lost your package.
Now,
how the hell could they lose the package if they reported to me that it was delivered?
Sounds like a scam to me.
I don't know. Do you think Larry, the driver, saw a rod and reel combo and thought, I'll just say it's delivered and I'll go fishing out on the pier today?
Hey, you never know.
I hate to accuse people, but yeah, I mean, that's one of the rare times. So I kind of rip on Amazon, but I will say my general experience has been unbelievable where you order something and boom, it's there.
Let me ask you, you said that guy had a security camera?
Yeah, he said their whole neighborhood. You know, like my buddy, he's rich and famous now. He lives in one of those gated communities where everybody has cameras, Tom.
All right.
Not just like me and you putting a cheap spy point game cam on a tree in front of our porch. They got real security.
Well, I got a question for you. How long did you spend in jail?
Let's not even go there, Tom.
Because you said only one of you did, so I didn't know which one.
actually, I didn't actually go to jail, but I had to pay a $35 fine. Common trick, scheme, or device to obtain money, goods, or services is what the ticket said. I got caught sneaking into a Foreigner concert in Springfield, Missouri. I was the back of the pack. There were six guys in front of me and two in back. They all got in, but me and my buddy Randy Ott both got collared by the police. So I had to pay a fine for that one, and the judge gave me a big lecture how, you know, this doesn't have to change my life necessarily. It wasn't too late to turn it around. It's not too late to turn it around. I kid you not. A judge in Springfield, Missouri had me up there, you know, 19 years old, giving me that lecture, and I had to, you know, act like I had a tear in my eye, and I was deeply, deeply regretting having tried to sneak into a Foreigner concert.
Wow.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, wasn't so bad.
That's the extent of my record, at least what I'm going to admit.
That's funny. Hey, you went up deer hunting. How'd it go?
Well, you know what? I didn't really do much deer hunting. I did more deer scouting. I put out a couple of cameras. I did that. I only sat one night for about an hour and a half. And now with my cameras set up on the stands, what I've determined, Tom, is there's been, let's see, two nights ago, I would have had, if I were on a stand at about 5 o'clock, I would have had a buck come right by. I don't think I would have shot that buck. It wasn't, I've got two big bucks, bigger bucks on camera. So, but I'm going to wait till, when I come back the first week of November after my trip to Florida, I plan on getting that first week in November, you know, that's kind of magic. That's like, you know, during the rut, of course, which was going to be another one of my topics. You know, this time of year, our listeners are hunters, most of them, unless there's some that don't hunt and fish and they just like to listen us knuckleheads ramble on every Saturday morning because there's nothing better to listen to other than maybe a show about what kind of paint do I buy for my garage. But that's beside the point. This time of year, as a hunter, you get all these hunting magazines and it's all about rut, 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 rut. Hunting the rut. And it's the same thing year after year after year. Rut, rut, rut. I don't know how they can find so many ways year after year after year in magazine after magazine to talk more about rut hunting strategies. I mean, you want to talk a subject that's beat to death. Nothing's beat to death more than the subject of the rut. Whole magazine. I want to read about something else. I know about the rut. But it is a good time to hunt, no doubt.
Yeah, you know, the same thing is true for fishing magazines. They kind of go over the same stuff every year or two. You know, it's the same stuff, same baits, same techniques, you know, and it's just worded a little differently or it's a different area. Danny, I got to admit, that's one of the reasons I stopped writing in outdoor magazines was because I said everything I wanted to say, and I didn't want to repeat myself, you know, and I felt like, you know, writing a story about plastic worms again, it was just repeating myself, you know, a few years later, and it's like, well, you know, if it bored me, you know, I am not going to send it in someplace. So did you ever get that way? Like, you just don't want to repeat yourself, you know?
Well, I wrote for Esox Angler magazine, and I maybe did about maybe five, maybe of their feature articles over the course of just a couple of years. And I was like you, I didn't want to ever repeat myself. One time the editor, Jack Burns, contacted me and said, hey, we'd like to see another article. And so I came up with something, but all of mine were completely different. I made it about completely different. I went from ice fishing to short line trolling for muskies to walleye fishing. And so they were completely different. Now, it was especially hard when Al Brown kind of suggested that I talk to his editor and had me take over his column at the Lake Country Reporter out here, which was part of Journal Sentinel. And I had that column for about 3 years, Bushy Tales. And I started out doing one a week. And then, you know, they had said, hey, one every week, one every 2 weeks. And then I went to every 2 weeks because, Tom, it was really tough.
Yeah,
to come up with something. But what I managed to do was take what I was doing anyway, whether I was taking off on a turkey hunt, going on a squirrel hunt, I was trolling for salmon. I was pretty much able to take what I was doing and just tell a story about it. And and that's it. Tell the story. You know, that's, you know, to people, you don't have to embellish or anything. Just kind of tell the story and let people ride along with you. And most of them were okay. I'm sure some of them were boring. But after 3 years, when Gannett News took over and they no longer were taking the contributing writers, I actually was kind of a relief because I'd written about as much as what I ever felt I feel like writing. I haven't written since. I did a few for Badger Sportsman. I think I did a bear hunting one for Badger Sportsman.
Right.
But yeah, you get to a point where you're like, yeah. And when you first start writing, I remember in 1994, my first article in Badger Sportsman, you're all excited to see your name in print, you know, and your picture. You're all, oh, wow, I got my article in the magazine. Then you get older, you don't care. So I guess after you do it enough.
I mean, years ago, I was asked to do a story for Muskie Hunter. But, you know, everybody wrote about bucktails, jerkbaits, crankbaits, you know, and all that. And I thought, what am I going to be able to add to that, you know? What can I add to it? So you know what I did? I wrote a story about spoons, because I never saw one about spoons, you know, the big daredevils and whatever. So I did one about spoons, which was, I thought, totally different, you know, because I'd never seen one.
I think that's a brilliant idea, Tom. And you know, every year when I'm laying in the middle of winter and kind of daydreaming about muskie fishing and what I'm going to do different to get the giant muskies in the upcoming season, I oftentimes think, spoons, I got these big spoons. I never used the big spoons. And, you know, Tony Rizzo in his old, old books, the original muskie hunter, got a lot of respect for that guy.
Right.
I think he kept stats on his fish, and I want to say that, as I recall, now I could be talking out of my butt, which I normally do anyway. So I want to say that maybe 5 to 10% of his big muskies, you know, we're talking big ones, were caught on big spoons. And why a guy doesn't use them, because, like I told you, my cousin Steven at St. Louis River got a 41-pounder throwing a Johnson big size, the big size Johnson silver minnow. He's a big believer in the Tom Neubauer. The split tail, what do you call that? White
split
teaser.
Split tail rubber trailer.
Yeah, trailer made by, who makes that then?
Zoom.
Okay. Yeah. He's a big believer in that. So he's got to have that splint. He got a 41-pound muskie. How many people are throwing spoons for muskies? Probably not a whole lot. And I do believe fish get conditioned by baits as well. You know, so the flash of a spoon, man, I'll tell you what, big pike love it.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me. I'll tell you, you take one of those daredevils and you tie some white bucktail hair on the treble hook, and the the daredevil will be swinging one way, but that hook will be swinging a different way. I'll tell you what, it's got great action, excellent action. And what you know what else has great action? Our first commercial break. That's got great action. But Danny, when we come back, I got to tell you about my Northern Pike fishing experience this week.
All right, and it's 7 o'clock. We got a call from Joe about a college bass tournament, I believe, in Kentucky or Tennessee.
Okay, well, sounds great. Well, we'll be right back, folks, with more of the Wacky Walleye's Cutting Edge Outdoors. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Wacky Walleyes, Cutting Edge Outdoors. Hey, thanks to all of our listeners out there. God bless you all. We always make it a point to thank our listeners and also law enforcement, first responders, healthcare workers, military, and everybody else out there working hard today, keeping our country the greatest in the world still, despite the fact of some things we won't get into. But thanks for listening. And Tom, what do you got there, buddy?
Well,
Pike story.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, Sunday morning, right after last week's show, the next day, my son Chris went out, and I went out to Megawick, and I'll tell you what, it was cold that morning. My hands were so cold, but I was dressed for it, though. I was ready for that 40-degree temperature. So, but it was not the greatest of days to be out because we had the high-pressure system, clear blue sky, and windy. Boy, I'll tell you, you couldn't ask for a worse day to be out. But there were quite a few boats out. There was a number, maybe about 10 other rigs that were out fishing there. And the thing is that over the years, Danny, you know, I have preached, and I've been preaching this for I don't know how many years, that on your spinnerbaits and buzzbaits, you have to have a trailer hook. You have to have a trailer hook, and also you got to have that split-tail plastic trailer. But that trailer hook is so important because, and we didn't catch as many pike as we normally do, but we caught enough, and we each took home one legal one, the biggest being 33 inches. But every fish except one was caught on the trailer hook. Now, if I didn't have that trailer hook and my son didn't have a trailer hook on our spinner baits, we would have only caught one fish. But by having that trailer hook, we caught, you know, we probably caught 6 or 7. Which, like I said, was not a lot for normally what we do out there because Nagawicka's got a lot of northern pike. It just was a tougher day. But we still caught some. But like I said, they all but one were on the trailer hook. So how important is it? Very important to put trailer hooks on. Very.
What depth were you fishing, Tom?
I would say some of it was 5 to 7 feet, and some of it was maybe 7 to 9 feet or 10 feet maybe. So it was in that range. There had to be weeds around.
Oh, okay.
You know what? When we went to the shallow area on the west shoreline, because that, you know, last year that's where we caught all these big perch was on the west shore. Now, it was a little calmer on the west shore because of the wind coming out of the northwest. And so we're on the west shore, and We only caught a few of those big perch, you know. I mean, there was a zillion of those little, I don't know, 3 to 5 inches. You know, those were all over the place. But you know what we saw going along the shoreline, and then we tried catching them, were smallmouth bass. There'd be, oh, there's one, and oh, there's a couple, and oh, there's one. You know, we'd see them along the shoreline. There's nothing else there except these little tiny perch, and I'm sure they were feeding on those, but we threw the different, wacky rig plastics. We threw jigs and craws. Even some jerk minnows. You know, we tried a number of things. Those smallmouth, they wouldn't bite anything else. They would not bite, you know. And they were all in that, there was a bunch of them in that shallow water up and down that western shoreline. There was, no weeds around. In those areas, there were no weeds. You know, it was really weird.
I will bet, Tom, that if you just took, a night crawler on a hook or a leech and lobbed it out there and let it just hit the water and sink, they grabbed the live bait.
Yeah.
That worked on me in Door County. I cheated when I was up with Don DeMuskie Hunter. We had a bunch of smallies that would, you know, swim around like in an aquarium, and Man, I finally thought, hey, you know what? Let's go old school. Let's just go buy some night crawlers. And so it was a pain in the butt to tie little tiny hooks on each rod and reel and get some night crawlers. And but by God, you had 4 pound smallies immediately grabbing a night crawler. They know those are good to eat,
Yeah.
even in that crystal clear water.
Yeah,
Hey, what was
I was just upset that they wouldn't bite a darn artificial though. But like I said, we each were able to keep one nice northern, and Chris ate his the next day, and my wife and I ate mine on Tuesday, and we had leftovers. So
What was the biggest pike that you
33 inches,
got then?
33
Okay,
inches.
well, if you
So
get a fat 33 incher, I mean
oh yeah,
that's.
they're decent. Yeah, they were decent. Yeah,
Let
matter of
me
fact.
ask it to ask on spinnerbait with the trailer hook. How do you suggest adding a trailer hook? What's the best way to add a trailer hook to your spinnerbait?
Well, first of all, you can go to different stores. They have trailer hooks. They've got a bigger eye, okay, on their hook, so that bigger eye will fit over the main hook of the spinnerbait or buzzbait. Then you have to put a stopper on, something so that hook can't slide back off again. A little piece of rubber, like let's say a rubber band. You take a thick rubber band, you know, something that's wide, I should say, not thick, but a wide rubber band, and just cut a square out of it and put that over the main hook, and that'll stop that trailer hook from, you know, backing up and falling off. Some of the rigs come with, you know, trailer hook rigs come with little rubber things that you can, you know, put on to hold it in place. And the other thing too with the trailer hooks, I mean the spinner baits, I think every fish we caught was on a black skirt and orange blade. I think everyone was on that black skirt and orange blade.
Get
Now,
just a great combination that you can use almost anywhere all the time. That black and orange, it's amazing.
yeah, it is. And my son might have caught one on a skirt with a gold blade, might have, but I don't remember. And I must admit, the water out there was super clear, very clear water. And what I couldn't believe, it's about, I don't know, it's about 8 o'clock in the morning, maybe 9 o'clock in the morning, and it's still pretty cold out. It warmed up from 40, maybe by that time it might have been 50 or 45, something like that. There was a water skier. And I'm thinking, that guy must just love punishment. I mean, I don't know.
Well,
Water skier out.
here's the deal, Tom. Those water skiers, I mean, they're kind of like mountain climbers. They do it just to say they did it. They want to be in the spring, they want to say they were the first guys out water skiing on the lake. And in the fall, they want to say they were the last guys out water skiing on the lake. But
Well,
then you got the ice fishermen who walk out on half an inch of ice because they want to say they were the first guys out on the ice. So basically, we're all dummies when you get right down to it. Water skiers, fishermen, mountain climbers, we're all dummies.
at least the water skier had a wetsuit on. At least he had that on. If he would have just been in swimming trunks, then I would have questioned his mental illness, you know, but
He wouldn't have seen his
he did have
private
one.
parts for 5 months.
Huh? What?
He wouldn't have seen his private parts for 5 months. They just freaking dis he'd have to put a he'd have to put their picture on milk cartons to see if anybody had seen them. So
Have you seen my
have you okay, Tom, I think we got what 4 minutes before our illustrious break, but I Sam I am says we got some callers, I believe.
Good. Let's do it.
All right, let's go to Tony in Milwaukee.
Yeah, hey, Tony.
Yeah, you guys were talking before about writing articles that kind of repeated themselves,
Yeah.
you know, after. But you got to remember, there's people that come into hunting and fishing by the week that are new to the sport or whatever they're interested in. So to you and me and whatever, we might be, we've done this before and this. But you got to remember, there's kids and old people, whatever, or just coming into the whatever they want to be on the water or in a tree stand that are looking at like, oh, I never knew that before, and this and that. To us, it might be repetition, but there's always new people coming in all the time.
Well, you know what, Tony? You're exactly right. You are. And that's why we have so many of these new writers I see them in magazines all the time. People that I've never heard of before writing about the same things that, let's say, I wrote about or Danny wrote about, but they're new people. They're, you know, it's not old to them. It's new to them.
They're so, younger. They want to make a name for themselves.
Right.
Oh, Tom, I called something about something else, too. You know, fishing on Lake X, remember the house that used to be, I used to call it the castle?
Oh, yeah.
They ripped it down.
No.
Yes.
So get out of here.
Someone bought that property for whatever, how many millions, and then they ripped it down.
Oh.
And who knows how many millions that costed, and who knows if they're going to build on it. I figure maybe it might be Chris Averley again.
Well, Tony, here's a quick true story. Years ago, I was guiding a guy. Oh, I forget the name of the building company he had, a construction company. He built houses. And he told me, we're on the lake, and he pointed at that house that looks like a castle.
Right.
And he said, a guy just bought that property for $2.6 million at that time. And he said, and he wants me to tear it down and build something new. And he told him, he says, I told that guy, no way I'm tearing that down. He says, we'll fix it up. We'll do new heating and air conditioning. And if you notice, they had new windows put in that.
Just a couple of years ago, that thing was on the market. I can't remember, for $9 million
or
something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like around there, and it's like, well, that is a good area to fish, too. That's nice.
And the guy's name was Ron Barron from Barron Builders. So somebody years ago wanted to tear it down and build something else, but I can't believe they tore that thing down. Those walls had to be 2 feet thick, you know?
It's nuts. It's crazy.
Oh, that's crazy. Hey, Tony, thanks for the call. I got to go out there and look at it now. I got to get out there. All right. Thanks, Tony. You got somebody else now, Sam?
Yep. Let's go to Mr. T in Milwaukee as well.
All right. Hey, Mr. T, what's going on by you?
Hey, how you fellas doing?
Good. What's
doing
up?
Good.
All right. I got a question since you guys, well, Danny, you still guide, and Tom, you used to. I got to ask this question. Is it unethical? I paid for a guide on a Lake X, and I told him I didn't have a boat and whatnot, and, you know, he took me out. We did some fishing. But the next day, I did have a boat and everything, but the next day I went out and fished these same spots, you know. And he thought that was kind of a sour thing to do, but I was thinking, I paid for those spots.
You're exactly right.
I paid for your service.
You're exactly right, Tony. Nobody owns that water, and you paid him to show you those areas. So if you go back out there, and then all of a sudden he pulls up and says, hey, what are you doing? That's my spot. You can tell him to go take a hike.
All right, I don't feel so bad now.
All right, yeah. No, you're in the right, Tony. Mr. T, you're in the right.
So anyway, Tom, somehow when you were in Grumpy Tom guide days, I can see you grumbling at somebody if he showed up right on the same spot the next day.
No, I never did. No, never.
Yeah.
See, here's the other thing. I knew plenty more spots.
The only thing I would say to Mr. T is this. In the future, if you book a guide, let him know and just be upfront and say, hey, man, I don't know the water. I got a boat. I'm going to be trying to get a boat and go out and do some fishing, but I want to go out with a guide first to show me some spots. And if you preface it like that and say, okay, then he knows he's going to take you out and show you some spots and that you're going to be out there fishing. So that way he doesn't feel like he's been hornswoggled necessarily, bamboozled, hoodwinked. Even like for myself, I'll put it this way. I got people that are, well, Troy Woodrow books guides. He's got friends who are guides. Jerry Ruffalo up in the Bay of Green Bay and different areas. And Troy will book them and he'll offer to take me with. But part of me as a guide feels like, I don't want to go jumping in this guy's boat and then all of a sudden have him see me on that spot the next day. So I'm kind of most of the time like, no, that's okay. I'm not going to go. I'll just go find the fish myself. So, I don't know.
You should take advantage of it, though, Danny. You should.
Yeah, I suppose.
That guy doesn't own the water. And
that's
like,
true.
And like Mr. T said, he's paying for that information. you know?
Although there are some guides that will, let's say, maybe have another guide, or maybe they'll buddy up to a good fisherman who's got a honey hole, and they'll get turned on to it. And then this guide will then just take over the spot and really abuse it. And so there are degrees, I believe. I mean, there are some people that'll horn in on other people's honey spots, and that somebody maybe showed you, assuming you'd keep your mouth shut. And next thing you know, they're in there taking the spot over, acting like they own it. There are guides like that out there.
Oh, yes, there are. Oh, I could mention a few.
And we won't.
But we won't, but we could. But with that, we got to go to a bottom of the hour break. Thanks for the callers for calling. Good questions, all. And coming up next is the Gut Report. So stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back with more.
Come here. I'm going to eat you. I'm bigger than you. I'm higher in the food chain. Get in my belly.
The Gut Report is brought to you by Discount Liquor. Folks, do you ever have a problem with your oven? Like, you know, you put something in the oven and it gets done sooner than what you think, or maybe it gets overdone and you didn't want it to because you were just going by the recommendations that say, you know, on the package, let's say, or whatever, saying how long to bake it at a certain degree. Well, we had that problem too. But what I did was I went out and got an oven thermometer. I set my oven at 350 degrees and looked at what the oven thermometer said it was when it got up to temperature. And you know what? Our oven was running a little hotter than what it should be. Well, that told me why things were getting done sooner than what they should, like our turkey at Thanksgiving and whatever. So, folks, if you're not sure about what your oven's temperature is, just stop at one of the, you know, box stores and get an oven thermometer. They're really inexpensive, and they'll change the way you cook sometimes. The Gut Report is brought to you by Discount Liquor, where you're going to find the best price, selection, and service at 51st and Oklahoma in Milwaukee and Main Street in Barstow and Waukesha. For weekly specials, go to discountliquorinc.com.
Welcome back to the Wacky Walleyes, Cutting Edge Outdoors. Hey, 414-799-1250 is our phone number. Or you can email us at ceoguys@yahoo.com. If you got questions, comments, got a fishing hunting report, get a hold of us now before 8 o'clock, before we're gone, and we'll see what we can do.
Okay, speaking of that, we do have an email here. A guy sent a link to the castle that was torn down on Oconomowoc Lake. It says, earlier this year, an Oconomowoc Lake home sold for what is likely the highest sale price ever in Waukesha County for a private home. Months later, the historic mansion has been razed. According to online real estate records, the Minowoc Mansion, also known as Bullen's Castle, sold for roughly almost $8 million in May. And the seller was, I don't know who that is. Anyway, the owners were expected to build a new home on the property. And, when the 16,000-square-foot home, get that, 16,000-square-foot, it was listed in 2017. The asking price was $10.5 million. And it has 21 rooms and 6 bedrooms. And it's on a 7.2-acre estate with 800 feet of shoreline. Oh, Minowoc was built in 1892 by George Bullen, a wealthy malt tycoon from Chicago. The home was modeled after Anne Boleyn's Hever Castle in England. And then it goes on with other stuff. It's like, holy moly. Unreal. And they got a bunch of pictures of it. Like, yeah, this... I'm going to email you that link, Danny, okay?
Wow.
Yeah, you got to see this. You got during a break, you got to check it out. It's very interesting.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah. I can't believe somebody buys a property for $8 million and then tears it down. What are they going to build on it? My goodness.
Yeah. You know, one of the homes there, I don't know if it's the castle or not, but one of those was haunted. Steve Milliot told me about it years ago. He was out there fishing, and they actually heard someone or something walking through the edge of the water. But when they went to turn on the spotlight, there was nothing there. So, yeah, that was his haunting story there. So maybe they tore down. Maybe they tore down. Maybe it was the castle that was haunted, Tom. Maybe that's why they had to tear it down.
Well, that thing was old enough to be haunted. Now, we got another email here from Paul. Oh, I forgot to thank the other guy. Anyway, it says, my brother and I would fish a lake and have luck on a certain spot, and that was our hot spot. And next year, we would come back and hardly catch anything on that spot. Paul, don't feel alone. That's happened to every fisherman. You know, the reason being is fish move. You know, it might be a hot spot this year, and you go back there next year, and they're not there, you know. But you know what? There might be a different day when you're not there that they are there, because you can't be fishing that hot spot every day, you know. So don't feel alone, Paul. That happens, you know.
So,
I got to hear. Wait a minute. I got to go back to this. Jeffrey sent us that thing about the Oconomowoc Lake Mansion. You should get it now. You should have it. Did you get it?
Nah, I'll get to my email in a bit here.
Oh, that's right. You got to do something. Okay, never mind then. Okay, so anyway, yeah. Folks, send us those emails at CEOguys@yahoo.com. We love them. Anyway, so, you know, and as a matter of fact, the one guy said that fishing around that area can be good. And, yes, it can be good. We've caught a lot of nice perch around that area, you know. And you can't miss it. There's a gazebo right on the point where the castle is. There's this really nice gazebo.
What's a gazebo, Tom?
It's it's a structure that's built away from the main building, from the main house. It's a structure that's usually circular, and, you know, you're covered from the rain, usually got mosquito netting around it or whatever, and you can sit in there and relax, do whatever. It's just a little, I don't know what you'd call it, a little building, not even a building, just a little area, not real big, away
gotcha.
From the main house.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And like I said, usually circular. I'm still amazed at that being torn down. My goodness. Oh, well. Well, life moves on, you know. People are doing things, but you know what else moves on?
What's
that? The Hornswoggle.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, the Hornswoggle, folks, is coming up next. You can win yourself a $10 gift certificate to Carl's Country Market out there in Menominee Falls on the corners of Pilgrim Road and Silver Spring. So if you want to be a contestant and you have not won in the last 2 months, give us a call at 414-799-1250. That's 414-799-1250, and good luck to whoever is the contestant.
Tom, I got a returned envelope with one of the gift certificates for one of our former Hornswoggle winners. When we come back from break, I'm going to put the name out there. And if that person can maybe get us in contact with us and get his address confirmed, I'll try resending it.
Yeah, okay. All right, folks. Well, you heard Danny, and we'll be right back with more of the Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors.
Welcome back to the Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors. I'm Dan Bush along with Tom Neubauer. Sam doing his usual brilliant job in the studio. He's the guy who has to do all the technical work, so keeps this thing running. So thank you, Sam. And Sam, do we have a lucky contestant for the Hornswoggle?
Yes, we do. Today we have Andy in Exonia.
Andy in Exonia. Okay, good morning, Andy. How you doing?
Good morning, Bushy. How's it going?
Going good. Go, it's Andy. All right, man. Oh, man. It's Lucky Andy, the big muskie slayer. So
there you go.
How many more 50-inch muskies have you caught since I talked to you last, Andy?
Oh, Not many myself, Bushy. But I was in the boat for my buddy's first 50 up on Eagle Lake this past summer when the border opened. We went across, and on his 45th birthday, he caught a 49 and a 50-incher 20 minutes apart, and they were both probably 35-pound fish. It was pretty ridiculous. But for me, just a nice 4-footer, so I was happy.
That's nice. What did you guys catch him on?
He caught his on a monster tube. So we got up there and we had 3 days of like 20, 25 mile an hour winds. We lost 10 degrees of water temp right off the bat. And, this was when we crossed on the first day, going into Canada, and we waited 7.5 hours, at the border to cross. And we thought we were entering a fishing utopia, and we learned that muskie fishing is still muskie fishing, regardless. But anyhow, it was, kind of a walleye-colored monster tube. He was working it real slow, just hopping it off of main lake structure, you know, boulders and whatnot. And like I said, in both cases, just giant 35. I mean, girthy Eagle Lake fish.
So, Tom, I mean, Andy, I'm glad you brought that up, because there was an article in Fisherman or one of the magazines about using the big plastics, and tubes were mentioned, and I thought of you when I read that article, because, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't you get a 50-incher years ago in Minnesota on a red October tube, like a red and white one years ago?
That is correct. It was not red and white. It was the all-white one, and it wasn't this real big tube, but it was still a very large, you know, plastic at that time, I would say right now, tube baits, monster, red October tubes in particular, are probably one of the hottest baits across the country when it comes to catching big fish and fish that are negative to neutral. You know, that's what we faced that whole week we were up there, was fish that were negative to neutral. You know, you always hope to have your 7-day trip have a 3-day window where they're neutral to positive. But when fish are not biting, those tubes really, they catch fish. They do.
Andy, I had a tube years ago that I bought when it first came out. It's before the big red October ones, which are what, 8-10 inches. But it was like a giant sized tube, and I don't know if it was Spence Petros or somebody did an article about using, you know, big tubes, you know, for muskies and pike. And at that time, I think they were just pretty much in the bass size. And I'm trying to remember, I bought them and they were maybe 4 or 5 inches, And I never really caught anything on them and lost faith in them, but that was the first time I actually heard about using those tubes. And how do you work your tubes for muskie? Because I don't even own one anymore. I got to put that up for next summer. How do you work them?
Well, I think the tube you were talking about I think it was made by Lindy, I believe. I know
that's
what you're talking about. They would fall apart real quick, but they would catch fish. But with those, you could sight fish with those in some cases, you know, especially, you know, early in the year, obviously when fish are up shallow, that would be a bait you could throw at fish and they would eat it. But in most cases, depending on the rig, that's the other thing about red October tubes, is there are about 4 or 5 different rigs that you can use. But the heavier, through the nose rigs that have in essence a jig up in the front and then a couple of trebles hanging off the back, you know, you usually will cast those out. You're usually working, I don't know, you can work anywhere, but somewhere maybe 9 to 15 feet of water, and you can count them down maybe halfway or even more so. And in most cases, it's kind of like a suic, a type of jerk bait, where it's a rip, you know, pick up slack, and you're wanting that bait to really just dart, you know, and go off. And it's almost on slack line for a second, which creates challenges, but I think most guys that work them, they give them enough time on the pause, but when they rip them pretty hard.
Okay. Well, that sounds like I fish a lot of baits. It sounds similar to how I work bass-sized jerk baits for smallmouths. You know, so yeah, well, that's good advice. So now you gave me something that I got to go buy. Thanks again, Andy. Now I'm spending more money thanks to you, but guy can never have more good muskie baits. So yeah, that's excellent. Thanks for the info. So we will get to our horn squoggle. So Andy, it's going to be about bullets. I was out sighting in my rifle at McMiller yesterday, which I'll talk a little bit about later in the show. But it's got bullets, so I got bullets and guns and rifles on my brain right now. So here we go. Hornswoggle or no hornswoggle? When deer hunting, it is best to use a full metal jacketed bullet because it'll penetrate further and kill the deer faster. Hornswoggle or no hornswoggle?
I believe that is a hornswoggle.
Hornswoggle, yes. And I'll give you a ring because we don't have the sound effects right now. Yeah, full metal jacket will drill straight through without initiating any expansion, and it's, therefore will not be dumping the energy into the animal and creating a big wound channel to, you know, to again create a good, clean, ethical kill. Okay, good. You're one out of one. Next one, cup and core bullets. Cup and core, your traditional cup and core soft point bullets are generally considered ideal for deer hunting because they do expand, shed some of their weight, but deposit most of their energy in the animal. Hornswoggle or no hornswoggle?
That sounds like no hornswoggle to me.
No hornswoggle. There we go. So you're two for two. Let's see about this one. Okay, if you are looking for a compromise type bullet between a full metal jacket and a cup and core bullet, a bullet that will penetrate deeply yet to expand enough to dispense some energy in the animal, the venerable all copper Barnes triple shock X bullet is ideal. Hornswoggle or no hornswoggle?
That sounds like no hornswoggle as well.
No hornswoggle, that's right, that's right. Another ring, so good job, Andy. Anyway, we'll get you on hold. Sam I Am will get your address information. I'll get that gift certificate sent out to you before I fly out today, my friend.
Awesome. Thank you, Bushy.
Take care, Andy. All right.
So, Danny, you were going to mention the guy's name.
Yes, I'm going to mention this guy's name. Mitch Spurka. Mitch Spurka. I got this sent back, and it was postmarked October 9th, so this was a hornswoggle winner of a couple weeks ago, I guess, and it was one of those long addresses, you know. Man, you know, what's the deal with addresses these days? Anyway, when I grew up in Green Bay, it was 1910 Deborah Lane, and you lived at that, and my buddy lived at 1314 Fiesta. I mean, it was just that and the name of a street. What's with all this W133S8569 West South, you know, oh my God, some of these country addresses. Do they really have to make it that complicated?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's another one of my gripes. And, you know, when I'm done calling Jeff, you know, Bezos, about my Amazon package, I'm going to call whoever's in charge of the Postal Service and ask them, what's with all these weird country addresses? Do you got it? Is this the way you got to label them, for criminy cripe's sake?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Monday I got to call the post office. I got to got a little complaint, so I'll give them a call.
Nothing worse than Tom Neubauer with the complaint. It's like the old man returning the cold soup at the lunch counter. You don't want to encounter a disgruntled Neubauer.
It's just a minor complaint, you know, not a
kinda
big deal.
It's kind of like a mama grizzly with her bear, the cubs, not something you want to be running into, so.
I just wanted to bring it to their attention, that's all.
Okay. Hey, well, I think we got to go to the top of the hour. It's 7 o'clock. I think we're going to have Joe's going to be calling in, talk about a college bass tournament, I believe. I think that. And also, I got Tom a recipe I want to run by you before the show is over.
All right, we'll talk about that and a lot more, folks, so stay tuned for more. The Wacky Walleyes, Cutting Edge Outdoors.
The following is paid commercial programming. The content and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of WSSP, Odyssey Milwaukee, its staff, or sponsors.
From Lake Michigan to the Mississippi, and every river, lake, and field in between, let's talk everything outdoors.
All aboard! Ha, ha, ha! You're on the crazy train!
All aboard!
Welcome to the Wacky Walleye Cutting Edge Outdoors Show,
fasten your seatbelts for a wild ride through Wisconsin's outdoors. Only on 1250 AM, The Fan.
That's right, folks. This is where you get your tickets punched for riding on the crazy train with Dan Bush and myself, Tom Neubauer. Sam Schmitz is in the studio on the boards. And we've got one more hour on this ride through Wisconsin's great outdoors. And we appreciate you going along with us. I don't know who's running this train, but we'll get there by 8 o'clock. Anyway, you can be part of the show if you'd like by giving us a call with any questions or comments at 414-799-1250, or you can always email us live at ceoguys@yahoo.com. So, Danny, I should say, Sam, do we have that caller on the line?
Yes, we do.
All right. And who is this again, Danny?
Yeah, we got Joe on the line here. Joe, if Joe wants to give us his last name, he can. But Joe is in college. He's really into the bass fishing, and he's doing some tournaments, correct, Joe? So what do you got there for us, buddy?
Yeah, Dan. Hey, Tom.
Hello. Good morning.
Morning. A partner and I are driving back from a Major League Fishing College Series tournament from Lake Chickamauga in Tennessee.
Lake Chickamauga, okay, I can't even pronounce it. I'm not going to try and spell it, but Tom, have you ever fished Lake Chimichanga?
I never heard of Chimichanga.
No, okay. Yeah, so
how'd you do, Joe?
Not the best, but we didn't blank. So it was about 278 boats were out there, and they were all southern teams. We got about just under 3 pounds of fish. It was really tough. It was supposed to be really good. The frog bite was supposed to be really good, but, you know, of course we get there and it turns off.
Well, you know, Joe, you can always say you never lost a tournament. You just ran out of time.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
So let me ask you this, Joe. You say 278 boats. Does that represent 278 colleges?
Yeah, it does. But some of those colleges have, like, 2 to 5 boats at these tournaments.
Okay. Okay, so it's not necessarily that many. And then what college were you guys representing?
University of Wisconsin-Oshkosh. We had now, was it 3 boats in total there.
3 boats in total. So when you say we didn't do that good, are you just talking about yourself and your partner and your boat? Or are you talking about the other 2 boats as well?
Oh, the other 2 boats blanked.
They blanked?
Yeah.
No, Joe, they didn't blank. They just ran out of time.
So Tom was an expert Wisconsin champion tournament bass fisherman. How can you go to a lake that's supposedly a great bass lake? Because I'm guessing that all these tournaments, maybe I'm wrong, Tom, are at least good bass lakes. How do you go and you don't catch a bass at all? How's that happen?
There are some areas that are terrible, like the Ohio River. Is a terrible place for a bass tournament, but they have one there every year, and sometimes it's only 4 or 5 fish that win it for 3 days of fishing.
Wow.
Yeah, it's tough.
So Joe, you went down there. Was it a 1-day tournament, 2-day tournament, or how's it work?
Yeah, it was only a 1-day tournament, but we got down there on Monday to practice all week.
Oh, so you were there for a long time then.
Gonna figure the lake out.
And when you say there was a frog pattern going, what did people tell you that the top water the plastic frogs were working good for a while?
Yeah, so there's these mats that collect in the river. It's kind of like a lake/river reservoir, and there's just these grassy mats everywhere. And these supposedly, if you watch any YouTube video the week before any fishing report, they were saying that the frog bite was hot. And anything topwater is great. Flukes were great. Chatterbaits on the side of the grass mats are great. But so like when we get down there, and everyone couldn't do it either. It's just like it turned off. It was like the week before was great, but now then, you know, of course, when everyone gets there and there's a big tournament, the fight's not that great.
What was it? A cold front or something? Was there a weather change or anything that you guys could figure out?
This guy at the bait shop said that. It's just a kind of a change of season. It's getting colder. They're just they're starting to get into fall patterns, and I guess that's kind of taking them off from the frog.
Let me ask you this. Did you try, like, crankbait, working some small crankbaits deep?
Yep, I tried a crankbait. But the one thing that really worked for me that I don't think a lot of guys did was I used Texas Rig Senko, and I rigged it with a 1/16th ounce full of weights. And I would pop in the grass mats and holes. And I caught probably on tournament day, I caught like 10 dinks. And it was a 15-inch limit. And I got like five 14-inchers. And it just, yeah, if it was a tournament of 14-inchers, I would have done great.
So I'm guessing you said there were a bunch of southern lunkheads there. I'm guessing one of those good old boy southern teams won the tournament. Is that what happened?
Yeah, there's this one college. They're from Missouri. They won it, and you know how they won it. They won it with frogs. Like, pretty funny.
I thought the frog bite turned off.
Yeah, they're the only team that got them with frogs, apparently. I don't know how. They must
okay.
have a platform.
Hmm. Unless, you know, there is something, Joe, that we like to call a hornswoggle on our show here. And, you know, they could have been hornswoggling you when they said they caught it on frogs. I was at a muskie tournament when these two local guys who were real tight-lipped, and I still wonder how they caught those fish or if they caught their winning fish. All they said was, we caught them on Suix in the weeds. You know, they said something so generic that everybody's like, what's going on? So who knows whether they got them on frogs or not. But it sounds good. You guys had a good time. What the heck? It beats you weren't in school for the week. You were down there fishing. Any more tournaments for your team? Now, you said it's Whitewater, correct? Is that?
No,
what
Oshkosh.
College? Oshkosh. I'm sorry. I'm getting old. I know you went to Oshkosh. That's right. Any more tournaments for Team Oshkosh coming up this year?
I think more near the springtime. It's kind of a lot to bring these teams way down south. But I think once springtime hits, we'll look into – I think they have some tournaments in Missouri and more further up north, Arkansas as well. So we'll look into
gotcha.
Those. But nothing really scheduled so far.
All right. Well, good,
Joe,
good job anyway.
From what I hear, Joe, that the college tournament fishing trail is getting quite big.
Oh, yeah, it's getting huge. And they actually had a record number of boats for this tournament. They beat the previous record of 230 boats.
I mean, back in my day, there was nothing like that, nothing like that. But that I'm glad to see that that's going on right now. So that's great.
Now, hey, let me ask you this. What do you compete for? Is it just for bragging rights and a trophy, or can you actually win money in violation of NCAA rules, or what do you win?
Yeah, right, with that new NIL deal. you win a trophy, bragging rights, and I think for this tournament they gave out $10,000.
$10,000? Woo! Yeah. Boy, that would fuel a few dorm parties if you guys won that. So,
yeah, that's like two cakes of beer.
Oh, my gosh. That's like for a college student winning the lottery. So, God bless you. I can see why you're down there doing those tournaments, Joe.
Oh, yeah, right. But this was also to qualify for nationals, and unfortunately we didn't do it this time. But hopefully next year.
Oh, maybe next year.
Gotcha.
Maybe next year.
All right, Joe. Well, drive safe. You said you're driving back, correct?
Indiana right now.
All right, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for calling and thanks for listening.
Thanks for calling in, Joe. Take care, buddy.
Okay, bye now.
Bye. Yeah,
right,
you know, Tom.
Interesting, Danny.
Yeah, you know, it's really great that they've got those tournaments for, for college students now. Because like you said, nothing like that existed in the past. And a little background as far as Joe, I met Joe when he was working as a server at Park Avenue Pizza, and he booked a muskie trip with me a couple of years ago, and his buddy backed out, so he asked asked another buddy to go along with, who really wasn't a real fisherman necessarily, but he went along because, you know, Joe asked him to go, and his fate turned out. Joe caught a nice pike, and then he was nice enough to say, oh, you take the next fish. Well, the next fish was a big muskie. And I felt kind of bad for Joe because he was the one paying for the trip and his buddy was the one got the big muskie. But Joe was very gracious about it. He was happy his buddy got a big fish. So it was a good time. And he is still to this day, as Carl shows, he's an avid fisherman now in college. So yeah. Good to hear from him.
Yeah, the only organized tournaments were, you know, back in my day, there were club tournaments, you know, and then there were, you know, bass club tournaments, and then there was the BASS Federation. The BASS Federation would have, you know, you'd belong to a BASS club, and then the clubs would have qualifiers, and then if you did good in the club, you could go to the state tournament, and if you did good at the regional, and then if you did good at the regional, you went to the state, and then if you did good at the state, then you'd go to the national. So, you know, that was what was going on back then, you know. So,
you know, he mentions Missouri, and it brings back fond memories. You know, I went to college in Springfield, Missouri, and my brother, my departed brother Tim, he really got into the bass fishing down there, and he caught a couple 6-pounders, and that's when he learned how to use soft plastic, something that his daredevil chucking, cranking, bucktail throwing brother Dan would never think about throwing, because I was not a finesse fisherman and I still probably suck at it quite a bit. But he'd go fishing quite a few of those areas. Like I said, got some good bass. And one funny story, you know, we talk about not being on the water when there's lightning and stuff now. But you remember those days when we were young and dumb and we'd stay out. Oh, you know, lightning's across the lake over there. See, it hit the tree on the other side of the lake. It's not over here. So he was out on some lake near Springfield, fishing at night fishing for bass in a little aluminum boat with a buddy of his who still lives in Springfield named Dave Osbury. He and Osbury were out in a terrible lightning storm. No way they should have been out there. And apparently Osbury made a mighty cast with his rod, and somehow just when he went to whip the rod went crack, and just the rod exploded, and at the same time a big lightning, you know, lightning flash hit the sky and the sound and everything. And when they heard that, they thought they'd been struck by lightning. They didn't realize that he'd broke his rod, but they thought they were in the process of dying. And he said it was just surreal. They're out there in the dark, and all of a sudden it lights up the sky, and kind of kind of a thing. Right around Halloween, actually, I think.
Oh, yeah, so. Yeah. Which, speaking of that, that's coming up pretty soon. Another, what, 5, 6, 7 days, something like that?
Yeah. Are you going to, like, get the carved pumpkin on the Neubauer porch put Mama Neubauer out passing out candy to the kids coming up and down the street?
No, we don't do any of that carving and decorations. That we don't do.
What do you, like, shut off all your lights and lock the doors and park the car behind the garage so nobody thinks you're home so no kids can knock on your door and ask for candy?
Yeah, we go away. But actually,
you chiseler, you.
We've got an email.
Okay.
Let me give you this one quick email before we go to a break, and then after the break, I do want to talk about orbs.
Orbs.
I'll explain that when we come back. But anyway, it says, Tom, please advise Danny B. That is modern way of letting us old rural folks that the GPS coordinates and mailing, the norths and souths, or they read the new way, they do it that way instead of reading Route 2 Box 35150 or something like that. And then he says, take care, that's from James. So James is just saying it's a new way of getting the rural folks into the 21st century with GPS.
So those, when it says west whatever, south this, that's actually GPS or latitude, longitude coordinates they're given? Is that what that's all about?
It's something to do with that. But the old way would just tell you a route, you know, a route whatever in a box number. So this is just
I don't know what was wrong.
It. But
what
anyway,
was,
yeah, when we
what
come
was
back,
wrong with the old way in World War II, they still got their draft notices. I think the old way was just fine.
Yeah. Well, anyway, when we come back, I'm going to ask you and the audience about orbs.
Orbs.
I'll explain what I'm talking about when we come back. All right. So
all
stay
right.
tuned, folks. You don't want to miss this on the Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors.
Welcome back to the Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors. Dan Bush along with Tom Neubauer. And Tommy, what do we got going here?
All right. A few days ago, a friend of mine was showing me pictures from his trail cam where there were these white, round, glowing spots. One would be lower left, then one would be in the middle, then it would be over on the right, then it would be up high, then it would be down low. They'd be all over, right, back and forth, moving around. And I said, well, what are those? And he says, well, some people say they're spirits, and some people say they're aliens. Now, I think, personally, I think they're like fireflies or something like that, you know, lightning bugs. But have you ever seen that on your trail cam, Dan? And I'm asking our audience, too. Have you ever seen those orbs? They call them orbs. And have you or our audience ever seen them? And what do you think about them? Have you seen those, Dan?
Not really so much. I don't think so. I've seen some mysterious fog, some spooky-looking fog-type stuff. You know, that I'm quite sure those were ghosts, of course. You know, sometimes you'll have if you got your real sensitive trail cam, like my deluxe spy point rig, you might get an eye of a deer that's way back in the distance and kind of looks like an orb.
Well, you know, you can tell if it's an animal or not, like if it's eyes. Okay. You can tell. I mean, it's not eyes. That's for sure. And by the way, folks, if you got any comments, it's 414-799-1250 or email at ceoguys@yahoo.com. But, yeah, you can tell it's not eyes. It's just a round ball of light. You know, that's it. And it moves funny. I mean, remember how you were saying you would get those pictures one after another because it was windy out?
Yes.
Well, this would happen where one picture would show it in one spot, and then just a few seconds later, it'd have another picture, and it would be someplace totally different, you know, or further away, closer up, in, you know, up, down, left, right. Yeah, I just think it's some kind of bug. That's what I think. Now, like I said, he's been told that they can be spirits or aliens, and I think he's been listening to, what was that guy's name, West of the Rockies? That you listen to every now and then?
John Denver?
No, Art Bell. Art Bell.
Art Bell. Art coming to you across the desert in the middle of the night, zooming across like an arrow through the sky, something like that.
Yeah, I think. Yeah. I think.
Coast to coast.
I think, yeah, coast to coast. That's it. I think the people who were telling him about the aliens or spirits were listening to that show too much. That's what I happen to think.
I don't know, man. You get some interesting stories, I'll tell you. You know.
Oh yeah, on the coast to coast show, yeah, you do, and that's on another radio station in the middle of the night. But
now,
yeah, you
now
definitely
here,
do.
You mentioned trail cams, Tom. Now, I got friends of mine who really are believers in Bigfoot, and my thing is with all the trail cameras. In every knucklehead in the world has a trail cam in all these areas. How come we're not getting pictures of Bigfoot on camera?
That's right. I agree. Yep.
I mean, that's like one of the great mysteries. Now, some people, I think I've heard.
Nope.
What do we got there? Okay. Second straight NBA title.
Well, Sam is working on the problems. He's working.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. So that's why if we have that. Okay. So some have said Bigfoot are like they're too smart right? They're way too smart to be caught on a trail camera. Some, I think, say that the Bigfoot actually aren't like a flesh and blood creature, that they're like some type of a third dimensional or interdimensional being. So, yeah, so you got a number of different theories on that.
Yeah, I'm sure. But you're right. With all the trail cams out there, you'd think you'd see one by now.
Well, let's talk trail cameras a little bit. Do you think trail cameras, has it really changed the game that much as far as hunting? What do you think,
no.
Tom?
No, not at all. I think it's just letting hunters like yourself knowing what's in your area. I mean, you know, what if you put out a guy puts out a trail, let's say he buys some property, puts out some trail cams, and he never sees a deer. Well, would he actually go hunt there then? You know, if he's never sees one, there's never one on his property. No, he might go someplace else, you know. But I don't. It's just like with locators. Yeah, you can see them, but you still got to catch them. With animals, yeah, you might see them on a trail cam, but you got to be there when they're around during the legit hunting hours, you know.
Yeah, so. Because when I was bear hunting with Jeff, of course we had several of those big bear on camera that were coming after dark. And they never did come in during daylight hours. And after a week of frustration, Jeff did make the comment. He was kind of reflecting. He's saying, you know, am I doing anything different than I would do had we not even had those trail camera pictures? And that got me thinking, are we as hunters changing our patterns? Now, like even myself, okay, I've been monitoring some trail camera pictures and I'm like, well, you know, I really don't want to go sit up and go hunting until I start to see those big bucks during daylight shooting hours and not just seeing them at night. Otherwise, I'm not going to go sit in that tree. Whereas in the past, years past, you wouldn't have a camera to tell you that. So you'd probably just go, I'd probably be up there sitting in trees. I don't know. Maybe it has changed us a little bit.
It's helped. Let's put it that way. It's definitely helped. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess. It is interesting the things that you do get on trail camera. I did mention that I had something very strange on the trail camera. I think I mentioned it last week. It looks to all, it's kind of blurry. It's obviously a photo of a skunk close to the camera, and there's a blur, and then it looks like you can see the tail feather of a bird and bird's legs, and it looks like the skunk has grabbed it in its jaws. It looks like a skunk pouncing on, I don't know what, a blue jay, something. I don't know. It's just the strangest thing. So you do see some strange trail cam pictures. I have to show that one. I showed it to Jeff, and he thought the same thing. He said, definitely a bird there, but how does a skunk sneak up and pounce on a bird? Are skunks omnivores? I think they are. I think they'll eat, you know, either or. So kind of interesting.
All right. We got an email here from Brady. Brady says, I agree. The light spots are bugs. Yeah, I agree too, Brady. They're bugs. And then it says, as far as Bigfoot goes, you should get a costume. I think he's talking to you, Danny. You should get a costume and walk past your buddy's cams in the dark. Bigfoot, T-Rex, etc. I've seen pics of guys holding deer mounts in front of their friends' cams to fire them up for the hunt. Oh, now there you go. See, you get one of these Bigfoot costumes, Danny, and then go walking in front of your friends' trail cams.
Well, you know, that probably
happened, right?
You know what? It's surprising that there's not more jokers out there doing stuff like that. Although, think about it. You might get shot. Maybe that's why you don't. Thinking about it. Now, on hindsight, maybe that's not a good idea. But years ago when I was fishing with my brother Tim on Lake of the Woods, we were way back in the middle of some bay, some really nice, cool bay. And there were these huge hills and almost like bluffs that towered, you know, maybe 100 feet or more above us. It was like a straight drop. And he commented that wouldn't it be cool to, like, get a hold of a gorilla suit and get up on one of those bluffs when some fishermen are back 10 miles in fishing in the middle of nowhere on Lake of the Woods, and all of a sudden start throwing rocks into the water, and then go out to the edge of the bluff and show yourself and start going and throw more rocks and then turn and run. That's hilarious. Can you imagine if you did that over the course of like a summer where multiple fishermen reported seeing the rock throwing Bigfoot up on the bluff? Man, I'll bet you could really get people going on something like that.
That would be hilarious. That really would. That would be funny. And I'm sure they'd be taking pictures too, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah. And then you'd have all the analysts, you know, kind of like that one video footage from California from years ago, which is still debated because one guy came out and said, no, that was me in the costume, we staged it, but others don't believe that guy was telling the truth. And then they look at it and they go, it's not walking like any man could walk. That's not a man walking, only an animal with that long gait. It has to be some type of ape. You know, you get all these, and it's swinging its arms. That's not a man swinging his arms. He'd get all that analysis. It'd be ridiculous.
It sure would be. Well, it's the bottom of the hour, folks, 7:30, and we got another break to go to. So hang in there, okay? Hang in there. This won't be that long. We'll be right back with more. And like I said, if you got any questions or comments about what we're talking about, 799-1250 is the phone number. That's 414-799-1250. Or email us at ceoguys@yahoo.com. We'll be right back with more with the Wacky Walleyes, Cutting Edge Outdoors.
Welcome back to the Wacky Walleyes, Cutting Edge Outdoors. And I'm Dan Bush, along with Tom Neubauer. We are in our last half hour of the show, my friends, the last stretch of tracks on the ride on the crazy train. And Tom, did you tease anything before this break? I can't recall.
To tell you the truth, I can't recall either.
Okay, so tease this. Okay.
Not sure if I did or not.
Riddle me this, Batman. Okay, I don't know why I said that. Grouse. I got a grouse article here in one of the hunting magazines that thankfully was not talking about the rut. And it talks about grouse hunting in northern Wisconsin, Michigan. And it gave a recipe that really sounds good. And I want to run this by you and see if you agree. Now, the author said that compared to other game birds, he feels grouse is the best. I don't know what our friend Al Shook would have to say about that, because he's eaten a lot of birds in his life. He's eaten so many birds, he's got feathers on his head. Sorry, Al. But he says it's the best white meat God ever invented. It's tender. It's not gamey. And it's as clean and organic as you can get. And while it can be prepared in a number of ways, his favorite way to cook the birds involves little more than a limit of grouse, a pound of butter, a little Bisquick, and a pint of heavy whipping cream. And this is what he does, Tom. He says, basically, you breast out the grouse, cut the breast in half, make some medallions out of it, roll it in some biscuit, and fry it in a pound of butter. And he said, once you get it browned, you put it in the pint of heavy whipping cream, bring it to a simmer, and cover it for 20 minutes, and serve it with biscuits. I don't know about you, Tom, but that one sounds pretty doggone good to me.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's the way I used to make pheasants, basically. But I didn't use Bisquick. I just rolled them in flour and fried them, and then, you know, to a point, you know. But what I would do is, you know, I put them in the butter, of course, and put the heavy cream in, and then put a lid on it and let them cook for a little while, you know, until they were fully cooked. And yeah, and then that cream, you know, that butter and that cream just goes right over the top of it, you know. I mean, it's a great, almost like, it's like a gravy, but not that thick.
Very
good.
And that article was in the American Hunter. So I thought that was just a delicious sounding recipe right there. And then now Bisquick, tell me, okay, for a guy who's a dummy and doesn't cook much, what's the difference between Bisquick and flour?
Bisquick, if you roll, let's say, something in flour, you're just going to get a very thin coating, crispy coating, okay, if you fry it in that, you know. But if you use Bisquick, it's going to be a lot thicker because they use Bisquick to make pancakes and biscuits and stuff like that. So basically, you might get a coating that could be a quarter to a half an inch thick, you know, on whatever you rolled in it. You know, so it depends on how much you put on it, I guess. Because there's baking powder in it, which gives it a rise.
Now, would you agree with that author's position that the grouse are the best of all the game birds as far as better than pheasants? Do you agree with that?
I don't remember because I only shot one grouse in my life, and I'm sure we ate it, but I just don't remember. But I have eaten a lot of, like, pheasants. And those are good. I mean, I don't know about grouse. I don't know. I haven't eaten enough of them.
The only experience I've had with the grouse is, the pheasants is, I overcooked some one time. And I guess like anything, I guess that's kind of a duh, of course type thing. With any game, you definitely don't want to overcook it.
But, you know, even overcooking something, to me at least, even though it might be a little tougher, if it's got a good flavor, I don't mind chewing on it a little bit, you know?
Well,
as long as it tastes good.
As long as the guy still has all his teeth, I guess that's okay. So,
yeah.
Hey, I wanted to talk, I kind of teased earlier, our Hornswoggle with Andy, with our friend Andy. We talked about bullets, and I did go out to McMiller yesterday to sight in. Our good friend Tom had gotten me that 3006 Kimber, and I went and sighted that in yesterday. And you know, I really do like the McMiller range. Typically, their prices have gone up a little bit. Used to be for around, I don't know, $23, you could have all day on whatever range you want or something like that. Well, the price has gone up a little bit to $27. So you can pay $17 for an hour, or for $10 more, you got more than an hour. And if you're trying to sight in a new firearm, you know, where it might take a while to get it dialed in, and then they got breaks in between where you got to cease fire and go down, change targets, whatever, I would suggest doing the all-day thing for the $27. You know, that way you're not rushing yourself to sight in. Now, during a weekday is the time definitely to go. There was hardly anybody there yesterday. So I would strongly suggest people getting out there and sighting in now rather than waiting to the last minute, because there's probably going to be a rush. If you do go, though, here's a tip. Used to be McMiller, Tom, they had these staple guns where you could go down and you could staple your target to the board. Well, they're saving money on staples now and staple guns, and you have to have your own way of affixing the target to it. So either bring yourself a roll of duct tape with you, or like these big clips. Now, like they're like a teacher would use these big clips to hold a stack of papers. Now, if you don't bring anything with you, like me yesterday, you're kind of screwed, Tom, because they sell the clips for you. But I think they're at about a 200% markup. I don't know. So I got there,
yeah,
and I paid $27 for the range. Okay, that's okay. I buy four targets. Okay, 50 cents a piece, $2. That's $29. Then then the other thing, you have to bring a chamber flag, which I've got 100 of them at home, but I always forget the chamber flag. So if you go, don't forget the chamber flag, because now I think they used to be 50 cents. Now you're spending $1 for those. Okay, so now I got another, you know, I now got my umpteenth chamber flag that I'll probably forget to bring next time, and I'll end up buying another one. So that cost $1. So now I'm up to $30. But those four clips cost $7. So she rings me up, $37. I'm like, holy cripes, I'm spending $40 here. I didn't expect to spend, you know, $25. And so note to the, be prepared. Either bring a staple gun with you or some duct tape or something. Otherwise, you're going to be stuck paying a lot of money for clips to affix your targets. So just a word of wise for, yeah, word of caution. And I'm not, and I still, McMiller's still a good deal. I like it's a good place to shoot, but you can save yourself a few bucks if you go there prepared. The other thing I wanted to mention for our listeners is this, and I'm thinking a lot of them are experiencing this. I don't see any more ammo on the shelves now than I saw in July. And it's going to be getting down to the wire here, where if you don't have ammo for your deer rifle in 3 weeks from now or a month from now, you could really be screwed. You got to try and, by hook or by crook, you got to get some bullets and get bullets fast.
Yeah, and if you don't, you know, if you don't have any, you're going to be shooting your handgun at the deer, you know. Most guys got ammo for their handguns, you know, so, or they might have some slugs laying around, you know, to use in their shotguns. But
well, here's the other thing I don't understand is a lot of places that you go to sell buckshot. They got buckshot, but they don't have slugs.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Buckshot for deer is illegal in Wisconsin, so I'm wondering, why am I seeing so much buckshot? Now, I believe they did. There was kind of a legislative, you know, screw up where they, I think, buckshot was banned for everything, and then I think it was reinstated because some people like to use buckshot for, you know, coyote or fox hunting.
Yeah.
But how many people do that? So why do I see all this buckshot on the shelves and no slugs? And then they still have the full metal jacket, 223 stuff, and the 9mm stuff. So for all the preppers out there, they're still stockpiling cases of that in the basement. So when, you know, when we get attacked by another country, they're ready. But as far as good basic deer bullets, everywhere, every place is sold out. I got an email from Cabela's Bass Pro, and it says Federal days are here. Well, they're kind of using federal ammo. So I thought, oh, good, they got a good selection of federal ammo in there. I went online, and I, at least where I looked, I didn't see anything online available for even in the Bass Pro shops, Cabela's, as far as ammo being available. So it's really going to be hurting some people if they don't have any. You better borrow something from somebody quick.
Well, I hope those people were buying stuff the last few years, you know, kind of seeing ahead is what was going on with the ammo. So.
Well, that's part of the problem, Tom, is everybody's seeing ahead now. So if and when they do see some stuff, they buy as many boxes as they can and they hoard it. And that hoarding mentality is just making this a vicious cycle.
Exactly. Well, folks, we got one last break to do. The final countdown is coming up. So we'll be back in a few minutes, and got any last-minute suggestions, folks, give us a call at 414-799-1250. We'll be right back.
It's the final countdown. The final countdown.
Welcome back to the final segment of the Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors. And again, thanks to all our listeners who've just tuned in, or to those that have been with us for the entire 2 hours. We do appreciate you. We also appreciate all of our fine sponsors and sponsors who've been with us throughout the many years. We appreciate that.
Yeah, sure do. Oh, Danny, I got a question. Now, for years ago, people were saying, oh, get a car that runs on diesel, that's got a diesel engine. You'll save so much money. And people were buying cars with diesels because they saved a lot of money in gas. Diesel was half the price of gasoline. Why is it now that even though diesel takes less refining to make than gasoline, why does diesel cost more than gasoline?
Why does diesel cost more than gasoline? Well,
why is
I don't
that?
Know it, about
they don't have to do that much to it, you know, it's less refining.
I don't know about that, Tom, but I do know why there's gasoline is a lot more expensive in the U.S., and it's not because of anything OPEC did. So,
Biden.
Let's not, Tom, let's not even go there. Come on now.
All right.
No way.
All right, yeah, right. No way, yeah, right.
Hey, I did get a tip from one of our listeners, good friend Nick, who I'm guessing he doesn't mind me mentioning this, being as he texted me this information, so I'm going to share it. He said that he's been getting his ammo at a couple of different, finding ammo at a couple of different places, so maybe some of our listeners can let their fingers do the walking, not through the yellow pages, but now I'm dating myself, but under Google. AbleAmmo.com, it's spelled just like it sounds, A-B-L-E, AbleAmmo.com, and another place, RogersSportingGoods.com. So thank you, Nick, for that tip. Maybe that'll help some of our listeners get ready to get some ammo so they can load old Bessie and go out there and shoot the mighty buck here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, I was surprised that out at MJ Gun Shop, in Hubertus, that they had ammo there that he just didn't see everywhere. You know, like when I took my neighbor out there, he's got a .22 Magnum pistol, and you can't find .22 mag bullets anywhere, but they had them. You know, so you know they might have some of that other stuff, and they're right on 175 in Hubertus, so might want to try MJ Gun Shop. So. They might
yeah.
have it too. So, but I think some of these smaller gun shops, instead of these bigger places, I think they've got some ammo that they've had for a while, you know, because they're not as popular, you know, maybe as like a, you know, Gander Mountain or whatever, you know.
You are right, Tom. There's a little place in Oshkosh too that had a great supply of shotgun ammo. This summer when I was there, it's in Oshkosh. I think it's called John's Sports Shop. If you exit, you go on Highway 41, you go over the big bridge, and then you exit. I want to think, what is the name of the road or number that you exit on? Oh, man, I want to say 46 or something. I think that same exit, there's a Quick Trip on the north side of the road. But if you exit and go south, you go a couple miles, and I think you cross a railroad tracks or something like that. And there's John's Sporting Goods on the left-hand side, had an amazing supply of shotgun ammo, and they actually had more rifle ammo than I saw at Cabela's, and that was back in July. So that might be kind of a tip. Some of those little extra gems, those hole-in-the-wall places. Hey, if you're driving up north and you're not on a schedule, and you see a little gun shop or sporting goods place advertised. Doesn't hurt to just walk in and look at the counters. Maybe you'll catch a stray box of 30-30. And I'll tell you, Tom, I feel extremely fortunate that over the years I'd always managed to buy enough boxes. Now, I'm not a hoarder, but I'm set. I'm fine. I got it. Well, it doesn't matter if I want to use my 32 Special, 243, 3006, 270, whatever I want to try and use. I got plenty of pills to put down the barrel. For deer hunting this year, but some people, you know, they buy a new box of shells every year, and then they maybe got three left before the next year. Those are the guys that have to look. Hey, I wanted before we're going to be running out of time soon, but a buddy of mine texted me this week. He's got a cabin. I forget where he said it is, but he saw a bull moose standing alongside
oh, yeah?
the road recently, which would really be pretty cool to see. And then the DNR. Also has a report out that the DNR is aware of elk being reported in southern Wisconsin, and I guess it's common for young bull elk to roam during breeding season. So, you know, when you're driving down the road, you know, not only watch out for deer, but watch out for moose and elk, because it's bad enough hitting a deer.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Doubly bad to hit a elk. And really, really bad to hit a moose.
Yeah, hitting one of those big guys, oh, boy, that would do some damage to your car for sure.
Tom, you're breaking up.
Yeah, I think we got one more email. I'll try to get to it quick here. Diesel fuel. This is from Gregory. He said, why does diesel fuel cost more? His answer, in capital letters, greed.
Hey, Tom.
I can't disagree with him.
I don't know for our listeners, but you're coming in and out sometimes with some static.
Really?
So I don't know. Now I can hear you fine. So whatever you were doing before wasn't good. So
that must have been due to something at the station, maybe.
No, you sound good over here.
Oh, he's good. Okay, maybe it's just on my end. Okay.
Oh, okay.
All right. Sam's got it under control. Thanks, Sam.
So, you know, we were talking about little shops, whether they be bait shops or gun shops. Many years ago, you know, one of the very fine spinning reels that was made many years ago was the Cardinal.
The Zebco. I was going to say the old Cardinal with that rear-mounted drag. I loved them. Well, they were green.
Yeah, they were green with the beige, okay, and they had the rear-mounted drag.
Loved them.
And, you know, for the longest time, you know, they stopped making them and you couldn't find them. And one of my old friends was stopped at a little hole-in-the-wall bait shop years ago. And the guy had three of them and he was selling them for like $24.99 when, let's put it this way, he could have sold that for three times as much, okay?
Right, right.
And, of course, my friend, we saw that and he bought all three of them. As a matter of fact, he made a deal with the guy. Instead of $24.99, he says, well, how much if I were to buy all three of them? And the guy gave him a discount on top of it. So sometimes, you know, finding those little hole-in-the-wall shops, whether it be gun shops or bait shops, you might find something in there that you didn't expect to find, you know.
Hey, great story, Tommy. And I guess we got a minute left, so we'll probably have to go next week. Remind me, I got a Cardinal reel story that I'll save for next week. But as far as that goes, that's all I got now.
All right. Me too, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
To all the listeners, thanks for listening. And God bless and stay free, everyone.
You've been listening to the Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors. We will talk to you all next week, my friends.
Football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the Free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.